In the year 2005, I happened to be in the city of Rome. I arrived just 3 days after Easter Sunday, and what happened there blew my mind. I had originally intended to take some friends around the city, giving them what I thought would be a cool pilgrimage to the very heart of the Catholic Church. In 2,000 years, so much had happened there. Of course, one cannot deny the Holy Land is the birthplace of our faith, but many of the Church's greatest defenders of the faith, including both St. Peter and St. Paul, became martyrs in the heart of the Roman Empire, Rome. And it was from this seat that the Western world became Christianized. While His Holiness Pope St. John Paul II, that's a mouthful, had not been well for years, suffering under the effects of Parkinson's disease, he took a turn for the worse the very day I landed. I remember this clearly because after traveling on a red eye across the Atlantic Ocean, the best thing we could have done to avoid the effects of jet lag was to stay up as long as possible into the evening and then get a good first night's rest. But it was not to be. We caught word of an all-night vigil in St. Peter's Square, and being good Catholics with love for our Holy Father, that's where we headed. Tens of thousands of people, probably more, poured into the piazza with concern and worry at the forefront of their minds. For hours on end, young and old alike huddled together to recite rosaries, litanies, sing songs of healing and of mercy, or to merely stand in silent solidarity for the well-being of a man who led the Church for so long that they could scarcely remember any of his predecessors. In his pontificate, John Paul became the quintessential ambassador of the Catholic faith to the world, making over 100 diplomatic trips. He traveled to more lands and nations than all of his predecessors combined. Few deny that it was he who was responsible for the fall of communism in Eastern Europe. And he tirelessly forged peace among all peoples, many of whom were mortal enemies, for multiple millennia, such as between the Arabs, the Muslims, and the Jews. And even then, what he didn't complete in his life, he still managed to accomplish in his death. It is something I would rank as his first miracle, but I would not presume that anyone, particularly the Vatican, would ask me for my opinion. And how did he do this? A remarkable thing called the Mass, which is where you and I are today. Because John Paul had created so many links with so many nations, they naturally, as is protocol, sent their highest-ranking officials to pay their last respects at his funeral. It was not just a Requiem Mass. It was a state event that at that time was the largest gathering of world leaders ever for a religious event. That's according to Wikipedia. The miracle was not so much due to the gathering of all those important people, but for a small part of the Mass that you and I, as well as millions of other people around the globe, kind of take for granted. And it came right after the Lord's Prayer, The deacon proclaimed in Latin, a language not favored by any nation, but in this case it was particularly useful as a language of neutrality. And he spoke, Offerte vobis pacem, which in English is, let us offer each other the sign of peace. At this particular funeral, as with any mass, all the people present, dignitaries included, no matter who they were, no matter what their faith, no matter which race or bloodline they had, turned to their closest neighbor and offered each other the peace of Jesus Christ. Bitter adversaries, such as Israelis and Palestinians, Muslims and Christians, Pakistanis and Indians, all could embrace each other without a hint of political motive. They were there, of course, to pay their respects to John Paul, but the action of the Mass was where they could express their desire for true peace. It was both refreshing and liberating. And even though this major gesture did not have a long-lasting effect, it did not go unnoticed. It did give the world a glimpse of the kingdom that Jesus Christ promises for us. And it is this particular part of the Mass that bears a bit of catechetical explanation. Because for many of us, our actions don't quite mirror the intent in its time and place. Now, that very same year, 2005, perhaps because of this papal funeral, the Congregation of Divine Worship and the Discipline of the Sacraments, wow, put that on a business card, at the Vatican debated whether or not to move the sign of peace to another place in the Mass. One suggestion was that place right after the prayers of the faithful. Now, the rationale was that the people did not quite understand the meaning of the action, and that it had become an awkward, noisy affair with people giving each other high fives, slaps on the back, bear hugs, and unnecessary movement around the congregation and even in the sanctuary. And the desire to move the sign stemmed from the argument that it was right after the most sublime part of the Mass, the actual consecration of the bread and wine as the body and blood of our Lord Jesus Christ. So the people, where they should have been the most reverent and the most concentrated on the sacrament, were exactly the opposite. They were not focused on Jesus. They were focused on the people around them. So moving it to the part of the Mass where we focused most on community seemed to be the most logical place. But then the theologians spoke up. The exchange of peace occurs just before approaching the altar to receive the most precious gift, the Eucharist. Jesus himself states in the Gospel of Matthew, therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar, and there recall that your brother has anything against you, leave your gift there at the altar, go first and be reconciled with your brother, and then come and offer your gift. Then in John's first letter, he states, if anyone says, I love God, but hates his brother, he is a liar. For whoever does not love a brother whom he has seen cannot love God whom he has not seen. In other words, we are not even supposed to approach the altar unless we are living in basic charity with our neighbor. To do this, let us turn to what is meant by the sign of peace. Perhaps in English it would be better translated just as peace and not sign of peace, because that's what the original language states. But even our English definition of the word peace is a little off the mark. That's because in the biblical tradition, peace is a different concept than what we commonly believe. It implies much more than simply an absence of war and strife, more than simply a passing feeling of contentment, relaxation, and order. It really implies the fullness of joy and life that can only be attained and experienced in a climate of justice, order, truth, respect, and goodwill. By wishing this for those around us and asking Jesus to give it to us, we are invoking our hope and faith in God, who is the source and sustainer of all good things, material and spiritual. And as such, the position of this giving of peace in the Mass is quite deliberate, since Jesus just provided his very body and blood for us as source and sustainer. Now, after 9 years of deliberation, they don't really move that fast. In June of 2014, just last year, Holy Father Pope Francis approved and confirmed that the sign of peace should remain in its contextual place, where it has been since the Second Vatican Council, which even then was a revival of the ancient practice. However, this document that he signed also urges the bishops and priests to educate the faithful on its use, that it be somber and dignified, without excessive movement and fanfare. And it is for this reason, and for the fact that Jesus just offered it in today's gospel, that I stand before you to help you understand truly what the sign of peace is. Now, I realize that many of you might feel that this is a loss of the communal aspect of our church, the part that feels so welcoming and embracing, but it need not be. We can still be all those things to our neighbors and guests. It's just that at this particular moment in the Mass, we express something different. Our liturgists and our catechists tell us that the sign of peace must be done with dignity and awareness, that it is not a liturgical form of good morning, but a witness to the Christian belief that true peace is a gift of Christ's death and resurrection. And this is what I will always remember about Pope St. John Paul II.